Welcome to Soroka Speaks, coaching minds and elevating careers. We're so happy to have you here. We hope that you enjoy this episode and that it supports you to put your potential in motion. Hello, everyone, and welcome to this episode of Soroka Speaks. My name is Emily Haruko-Lieb, and I am your co-host, and I am here with my beloved co-host.
It's Claire.
And we have a very special guest with us today. We are joined by Eva Bakun, who is the Director of Industry Insight and Engagement at Clarion Gaming. Welcome, Eva.
Thank you so much, Emily and Claire, for inviting me, and really looking forward to spending a little bit of time with you right now, talking about a variety of industry and non-industry topics.
Wonderful. Well, we're so excited to have you here. We wanted to have you join us today because as we were considering guests that have, you know, shaped the industry and have deep insight into things like working in gaming, sure, but working in male-dominated spaces, being an advocate for belonging and diversity, equity, and inclusion. And of course, you came to mind top of the list. So we are so excited to have you here with us today. But before we dive into all of that, one of the things that I was curious about is I don't actually know your origin story into the iGaming industry, into Clarion. And I was hoping, you know, if there's anyone else out there that, you know, knows you or of you that also doesn't know this story. And for the rest of our listeners and audience, tell us a little bit of like, how did you get into, you know, this organization and this industry in the first place? Where were you? What was going on in your life? Tell us the story.
Thank you. Thanks, Emily. So I have been been part of the industry for so long that it's very possible and very likely that most people don't know actually how I got into the industry, because it was quite a few years ago. And I don't actually necessarily like to talk about the numbers, you know, of the years that I've been part of the industry. But really, it started probably as it might have started for a lot of people as a job search, right? So I was, started my career in 2005 as a conference producer. That was back in Poland, in Warsaw. And then I moved to UK. I did work for a couple of years as a conference producer for a different organization. And then found a job at Clarion Gaming for a conference producer to produce, I wonder if anyone remembers, EIG, and become part of the team. I think you guys, Claire, I think you might remember EIG, yeah. Actually in Barcelona, which is where I am right now. And that's how I joined. And as I said, it was quite a few years ago. And I guess this is also what we'll be talking about. I have been privileged to see the industry grow and also to kind of see myself grow in the industry and go through a variety of roles and different types of focuses that I've had in the sector.
Wonderful. Well, on that note, this, you know, role has taken you to different countries, different sectors of the industry, events all over the world. How do you think that working across continents, cultures, companies, what have you learned about international business and about our industry specifically? What do you think has impacted your experience overall?
So I am Polish. I mentioned I started my career in Warsaw, then moved to UK. I lived in the UK for many years. I also did have a few years of life experience in the US. And now since last year, I'm living in Spain. So I guess I have had a fair amount of international experience and moving cultures and kind of really trying to adapt to different types of work and environment and people relationships within the work and office environment, but also, you know, across companies, right, within the industry. And I think I am still, to an extent, trying to adapt and often, you know, like trying to be really conscious about who I am and about, you know, my personality that is very linked as well to where I am from. And also, you know, the environment that I'm trying to work with, really focusing, I guess, on what I want to achieve. But at the same time, and I think this is important, making sure that I am not losing myself and that I'm not losing my authenticity, right? So yes, that goal, what you want to achieve is really important, but I want to make sure that I am staying myself, right? Like that I'm staying honest with who I am and that I stick to my personality. And I think this is, I guess, what I've learned when it comes to working with different cultures is finding the right balance, right, between that goal what you want to achieve, and your own personality, your own authenticity. But, you know, as I say, like, there's still very often moments where I just get it wrong. But because I'm so conscious about it, like, I think, you know, I'm able to catch it and, yeah, and, like, kind of think about it. And also, I think what was interesting is, as you know, as I in my role, as I have been engaging with different nationalities, with different cultures, that also meant that I have been engaging with different ways to do business or different ways to regulate gambling. And this, like, even on an intellectual level, has been very interesting, right? Like, it's very different how regulators perhaps see their role in Europe versus to what they perceive, you know, as their role or consumer choice, consumer protections elsewhere, right? For example, in North America. And I think it's also, like, kind of interesting to stay attuned to this as you observe, you know, and as you maybe track some of the changes in the market, and as you try to bring the different cultures and different businesses together within the global platforms that we built as Climb and Gaming.
It's a lot. And I think, you know, navigating, like you mentioned, you're navigating different cultures, different people's different values, being authentic to yourself and staying true to yourself whilst kind of building your own career, your own voice, and noticing where things are showing up, where perhaps you can influence a change or open conversations about change. Can you share a moment in your career when perhaps you felt like you didn't belong, knowing obviously, you know, the different places that you've lived geographically, the different companies you've worked for, working across multinational geos? And how did you process that? And did it teach you anything about the systems that we operate in?
Thank you for that question, because yeah, this will kind of take me as well to you know, becoming being a little bit more personal on this podcast. So I'm an introvert, right? Like, I'm a proclaimed introvert, and I always say this, people often get surprised that's who I am, but I am like a classical introvert who needs their space, you know, who likes moments of self-reflection, who, you know, who is maybe like sometimes too sensitive to too much going on and too many stimuli, you know, kind of impacting on how I process information. So I have to say, like, in the early days of my career, you know, being kind of like propelled into this, like, very, you know, crazy, loud, extroverted world of iGaming in particular, because this is very much was my focus initially, that was difficult, right? Like, I found that I had to manage this and to an extent, maybe, you know, force myself to come out of the comfort zone and to deal with this, right? If I wanted to also progress and I wanted to do well and I wanted to engage with the people that I needed to engage with and I wanted to network. Luckily for me, the industry has matured and is kind of more attuned as well to a diversity of personalities right now. I also have grown within the industry where I can also say no, right? Like, to some of those environments. There's a more diversity of environments now where I can maybe, you know, yes, be part of the extroverted events, initiatives, but also find space and find people that I can connect with more on the kind of like, yeah, more quieter level, right? But also looking back at the start of my career as a conference producer, I really totally felt that I was not belonging, you know, as a conference producer. Like, for the first 6 months, I felt like, God, tomorrow I'm definitely gonna lose this job, you know, because it will turn out that I'm not doing it correctly, that I'm not performing. Because, like, as a conference producer, especially in those early days, it was all about cold calling, you know, it was all about engaging with people, like using the phone, which we as introverts, like, this is the last bit that we go to, you know, much prefer written messages. And I, you know, I had to push myself to do it, like, basically, you know, I had to do it day to day. And it was hard to me. But at the same time, I realized that I'm quite good at it, you know, like, I was quite good at engaging people in the conversations, talking to them, that going actually, you know, again, as an introvert, I really don't like small talk, you know, which is pretty much what often we have to do in those networking environments. But I was able to kind of move away from small talk pretty quickly into kind of more meaty conversations, which is where you find, you know, what is going on in the industry, what are the challenges, where people need help, where they need information. Well, yeah, so I realized that actually being an introvert, that's also my power and my strength. Yeah, and managed to use this to grow and, you know, to become a fairly successful conference producer, and then growing into that role, you know, into kind of more strategic research roles. Yeah, so kind of like examples on two different levels, both within the industry, but also me personally, right, within my role and the early days of my role working in the conference environment.
I love it. I feel like I learned something new about you and I identify so much. I think I also identify as an introvert and I think I can be outgoing. And that is perhaps a misconception that people have that just because perhaps like you, you've found the way to network and to connect with the people that, you know, you want or need to connect with. And you can be outgoing in that sense, but that you're not necessarily an extrovert just because you're able to do that. And that's some nuance that I've had to experience in my own kind of growth journey as well. So in line with that, you essentially, Eva, are really like a curator of conversations. That's really one of the ways that I see you and one of the influences that I think you have in the industry and really what you're able to cultivate and, as I said, curate, especially at live events. Do you think there are conversations that the iGaming industry in particular is still hesitant to have or even refuses to have? What are some of the conversations that you think are needed that are still perhaps taboo or relatively uncomfortable or being avoided? Any insight into that?
You know, the industry has made this huge progress when it comes to talking about things like diversity, safer gambling, things that are really very close to me that I curate as well within our environments as a content provider, but also content initiator or content creator, right? Or conversation creator. And I think there are still, you know, and I see this, you know, while you have maybe certain leaders that are not want to take that leadership position, I think there's still a lot of organizations that are lagging behind, that don't want to have this conversation, that perhaps are not fully transparent or honest or authentic when it comes to pursuing, you know, what perhaps they would like to claim. And I think, you know, but another conversation, I suppose, that I often get uncomfortable with, or I kind of notice that the industry is ambivalent on, is this relationship between reality of regulation and wishful thinking. I think the industry, you know, I often hear this in the conversations, regulators should do this and regulation should do that. And, you know, we are like, this is what we're doing. We are transparent. We're doing this. We're doing that. When this is what the, you know, regulators should share between them, you know, or not reinvent the wheel. And so you see this, like a lot of this wishful thinking. And I've heard this for so many years, like having been and having observed those conversations, that sometimes I get frustrated, you know, because like clearly it's not changing and it's not going to change. And I think like we as an industry sometimes just need to kind of become real about, you know, some of those political realities and that the industry itself is not the whole world. You know, it's like there's so many other impacts that maybe regulators or other kind of institutions or groups, organizations, people that they face, and they don't necessarily live in the core of our industry to really feel like or feel obliged that they have to understand every single angle of it. And yeah, like I sometimes think that the industry, you know, is just too insular and too focused on itself to be able to come out. And, you know, like I think it links to this topic of inclusion, of understanding like that there are other points of view, you know, there are different perspectives, and opening yourself up onto those different perspectives to really consider, you know what, I'm not the center of the world, and the way I think is not exactly the way everyone else think or should be thinking, right? Like actually there are different realities to the one that I'm living in.
Game studios don't want to talk about the games, you know, they don't want to publish the top performing games because then somebody might steal their idea. You know, it's just, but actually what I've noticed over the last maybe year, 18 months, there has started to feel like a bit of a shift in people being a little bit more open about what actually is working and what isn't working for them as a business. And rather than like, oh, I don't want to say anything because I don't want anyone to copy, steal, or I don't want to admit any failure. Like I did something and it just didn't work. Whereas I really have sat in on quite a lot of panels and quite a lot of sessions and watched quite a lot of webinars. And I feel like that the shift has started, but it's really slow. Like it's really slow to have those conversations and to be open and honest about what's working. And also to come in with, like you say, perhaps a slightly different opinion and be receptive to that and be open to the learning and those uncomfortable conversations. Yeah, when you was speaking about that, I thought I really agree with you, you know, being in the industry such a long time, but I really feel like we're slowly moving in that new direction, but it takes a long time, you know, to make significant change and change people's perception. It's almost like a whole movement.
Yeah, I think that's the hardest bit, right? And I have worked in roles. I have had roles where it was about cultural change, and you know, I've learned this is the hardest bit.
When we teach business acumen, we teach entrepreneurial mindset, or sometimes like what we consider an owner's mindset. If and when you can consider, you know, multiple perspectives, as Eva was suggesting, that's what I sometimes consider like your ability to think like an owner. You know, you're not only thinking about your industry, you're thinking about, you know, from the perspective of regulation, perhaps, how do these choices impact, you know, society, culture, wherever, you know, whatever, within whatever regulatory district we're talking about. And perhaps sometimes, you know, I might concur that sometimes this industry is a little bit selfish, is a little bit greedy, is a little bit tunnel visioned. And I think that in that, we have an opportunity to invite people to a wider and a larger perspective. And if they're willing, support their growth personally, professionally, business-wise. One of the things that, you know, we know we can cultivate in this arena is this concept of diversity, equity, inclusion, and belonging, so known as DEIB. And I think sometimes people think of it as just DEI or just diversity and inclusion. And I'll just share like my perspective is I really believe that when diversity, equity, and inclusion is at play in an organization, it cultivates this sense of belonging. And then belonging leads to psychological safety, which leads to greater productivity, which leads to reduced stress and all of these things. So as a beautiful curator of conversations, Eva, at last year's, or I guess this year's 2025's ICE, you put forward an initiative to bring DEIB and the conversation to the forefront. I'd love for you to tell us a little bit about that initiative, but perhaps you could start with some behind the scenes and what were those conversations like in the meetings or the boardrooms to push this initiative forward? What were you committed to? How did you enroll others in bringing this forward? What happened and what's your vision for the future?
So we have been committed really to cultivating this type of conversations and increasing also the focus on them for a number of years. It's true. This is something that I have been maybe spearheading and bringing to the table. And it's kind of started a few years ago. I don't know, like I never remember, but it might have been 2015, 2016 when... And, you know, it was very much at that time part of my interest. It continues to be, you know, my personal interest. At that time, in early days, it was me being interested in the topics of DEIB, following those early days and then saying, you know what, like we should also, you know, we should also include it. We should talk about it. I think there's a huge need within our industry to talk about them. And we have a platform that can host these conversations and that can help, you know, with its marketing power to bring them to the industry. In those early days, it was just, you know, creating some content, seminars, focus on DEIB. To be honest, I never really, you know, asked me about the boardroom conversations and how it all came about. I never really had a pushback on this. And I always felt like I was, that no one even doubted that there was a need for it. It was more a conversation about how much resource we can dedicate it to it, right? And I think we can see it as well through the evolution of our focus on DEIB, that there's been more and more resource on it every year. You know, as I said, like it started with just like a seminar, you know, back at Excel in like upstairs rooms, in the gallery rooms, actually, not even in the conference rooms, to the conference rooms. I think location as well kind of reflects the focus, but not only just us as the show, you know, because it really reflects the focus of the industry. You know, we often get criticized, oh, it should be part of the show, or it shouldn't be in the access rooms. It should be closer to the industry. No, but I often say like, yes, but is this really where it is? Is this where it sits within the industry? Because yes, we can push the conversations, but we can't really force people to then go to the room, right? Like, but yeah, like, so last year we decided to expand the scope. So instead of just having the content focus, we decided to also have a video campaign and have networking events. An idea behind it was really to diversify the channels, the timelines, and also the platforms and the types of events that we were offering, right? So from just doing content, we went to content, networking, and video campaign that was launched a few weeks beforehand because we wanted to kind of get to the masses, right, through the video campaign. And then earlier this year in January, we continued with those amplifications, but we also moved the DEI focus to the show floor, very much inspired by what we had done before with Safer Gambling through the Consumer Protection Zone and now called Sustainable Gambling Zone. And we also invited a group of people who are passionate about these topics as allies, you know, ISDI allies to help us amplify this message even more. By really reaching out to their networks, to their communities where they have trust more than we do as a kind of mainstream and generalist marketing platform that kind of talks about everything that's out there in the industry, right? Like, we wanted to use the power of the allies and we wanted them to feel that they own part of this. Mm-hmm. To be able to reach out to broader groups of people and, again, use their authority and the trust that they had within those groups and within those networks to support us. Yeah, so we went from just content into, like, a variety of activations and initiatives. And I hope just the first year, you know, it's a new venue as well. We just hope that it will, with each year, you know, it will be considered more and more as a home of the IB and different underrepresented communities and their allies, but also as a platform to engage everyone within the sector with those themes.
Yeah, I think that's a beautiful segue, I think, to talking about the question of what do you wish more women and more people from marginalized backgrounds knew before entering the gaming industry?
Yeah, of course. So the industry has changed, as you said, Claire, and as you experienced. You know, I've seen this happening. I think a lot depends as well where you are, right? Like, you know, and again, like, kind of operating across different cultures, I experienced this as well. I think it's important to acknowledge that there's been change and positive change, maybe in some areas more than in others, right? Like, UK is, like, very, really realizing this, right? Like, how progressive, and I'm totally appreciating it right now, how much more progressive it is perhaps than other areas. Like, what really has been helping me in some situations is, and that's part of me being kind of involved in these conversations for a long time, is really that awareness of the mechanism of sexism and discrimination. Just really to understand that this is what's happening, right? Like, this is the mechanism that is taking place in front of me, and instead of thinking there's something wrong with me. And I think this is what I would say, you know, to women coming into the industry and educate them on, like, this, you know, that there are some things being said or some ways that we act, because unfortunately, you know, there's still discrimination, there's still sexism, and it's important to identify those mechanisms to make sure that we are sticking to the gun, to the guns, you know, and that we are not doubting ourselves, that we are recognizing this is what's happening. It's like a typical mechanism of silencing, you know, that happens, very nuanced, right? But we know those mechanisms. And then, like, this has helped me definitely to kind of, you know, stay strong, right? And keep resilient and keep confident, and keep believing in what I'm doing is the right thing, and not getting stopped thinking that, oh my gosh, maybe I'm not performing well, or I'm not right, I'm not up to the task.
Thank you. And I think it just ties in really nicely. I think you touched on the allyship as well. And I think that's where it's, you know, the conversations that you're creating at ICE is opening more of those conversations into what is allyship, and how can more people get involved of all genders, of all seniority, you know, and I think that's really important as well, is we need as an industry to boost that recognition more in terms of that allyship and that mentorship. I really think it's, you know, we can as an industry do so much more. It's one of the reasons that I love what I do in the industry as well, working with Emily, because I feel like, you know, we are coaches, but I feel like we're a huge advocate for women and underrepresented as well, doing as whatever we can to kind of encourage and talk about this sort of allyship and mentorship throughout the industry as well. So yeah, I'm really happy that you touched on that. Thank you.
Thank you for the question. And I think, like, yes, you mentioned allies, and, you know, the question was about what do we want to tell women, right? But I think it's about kind of broadening this conversation to everyone, right? And teaching, you know, I talked about mechanism, right? Mechanism, your typical mechanism of sexism. And it's not only women who should know them, right? Like, we should all be educated on those things.
Absolutely.
To be able to recognize them and act and advocate.
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, I think there's a lot of room for growth in that area, particularly, you know, I don't know if this is me overstepping my place, but what I would love to see more of is like the men kind of like supporting the men, or like, you know, if and when there is less than desirable activity, you know, witnessed perhaps, that as opposed to turning a blind eye, you know, how do we... You know, how do we hold people accountable in a way that doesn't cause more harm and trauma, but that really does shift what is acceptable, you know, out in the open or behind closed doors? I think that's the key to allyship. That's the key to, you know, creating a shift and a change. And so many, you know, what I might call like optimal men, if you will, are so unaware that this stuff is still happening. Right. When, you know, we've had a few conversations and over the years, especially around different topics around iGaming and women in iGaming, just around like, is really that stuff still happening? And it's just like, wow, open your eyes, look around, you know. So how do we support, you know, I think that that's where I would like to see. Because as women, you know, my perspective, agree with it or not, and that's fine. And I'm not committed to being right or wrong. But I think that if women could support and correct, I'm going to be black and white here. If women could support and correct men on their shitty behavior to change it, like we would have done that already. Like we would have called them out and they would have changed a long time ago on a whole. So I think as a collective, how do we support a more optimal interaction between all people, regardless of race, gender, sexual orientation, whatever it is? And I just love I love that there's some values aligned in all three of us in this conversation, and perhaps even some overlap in what we would envision for the industry in the future. So looking to the future, my dear Eva, tell us a little bit about ICE 2026. And what might we be able to expect to see from you, from these types of conversations and initiatives? Anything that you're particularly looking forward to?
Of course, continuing with those initiatives around DEI and safer gambling, you know, which these two are really close to my heart. I am, and I've been diagnosed to be a purpose-driven person. And it's really great to be able to you know, find ways to realize this purpose within the industry, kind of grow from this like very commercially focused person that I was as a conference producer to really focus on this like very nuanced commercial transactional projects, right? But really those that add to our value. But I think what really what I realized, and it really has been during the last year of the move and working in a new environment, you know, the reason why I moved to Spain was also to kind of get closer to Spain as our new host country. And that really kind of made me realize that even the power of what we have, you know, in ICE, and that we're not just a platform for people to connect and to connect between one another and between them and the various products that can help them grow their business within the next 6 months or maybe a year, but actually that we have the power of creating conversations and you kind of like, you know, alluded to this as well in the questions, in the way you ask me questions, by deciding who is in the room, but also just through the sheer kind of power of the brand that ICE is. And from there, working with some of the partners here locally, with Fira Barcelona, we're really able to extend this consideration and the contribution that we're making to the conversation, long-term conversation of the industry, not only, again, just by connecting, but by becoming a platform to share the knowledge and to share the connections, but actually to contribute to that knowledge creation. In the last few months, I've worked a lot on what we call a legacy fund, you know, the legacy of ICE that we are creating here locally in Spain. Really, you know, it just opened the opportunities to create that legacy further in the industry. We launched ICE Research Institute, where we are investing in academic research. We're offering grants for academic research to further the understanding of the impacts that our industry is making, right? Like long-term impacts that the industry is making, but also impacting on the perception that the industry has within the sector. And this really is giving me a lot of, you know, satisfaction to be doing this, to offering those grants, working with the academic partners, looking for academic partners and bringing them together to work with some of the industry partners to make sure that the research we're doing is the research that will change, you know, or contribute to the creation of best practice within the industry. And, you know, this is kind of like a project. We haven't talked much about this yet because we've been kind of working in the background to create the foundation of it and to find the partners and to, you know, kind of invest in the first pieces of research. And now we are kind of in year two and we, you know, we have a kind of something to already talk about in terms of the corporations that we, but outside of the research, we also, you know, we're looking to do Safer Gambling Hackathon. That we're based, the idea is to create a product, right? We're looking we're going to finance and working with universities here locally in Catalonia and Barcelona, financing a university coursework, right? Focus on responsible gambling. So all of those kind of activities that, you know, you wouldn't think that an event organizer would be doing, right? But it's all really about changing also the positioning of the industry and making sure that the industry is part of those broader conversations of the impact that it's making on and of its participation in the society. And that, you know, again, like this is kind of what takes us away from just being a platform, right? And for me, it's something that's been giving me a lot of satisfaction. You know, of course, you know, the work goes on in terms of, you know, the show is growing and has grown. We're taking extra new calls. We're working on how we attract more participation from Latin America and maybe from some other sectors. We've had some really exciting interest coming from like some mainstream technology brands, you know. So yes, of course, there's a lot of that work, kind of very show focused as well. But for me personally, is also this kind of broader initiatives related to that legacy that we're trying to build here, starting here in Barcelona and Catalonia, but again, with impacts for the rest of the industry.
Beautiful. You make me excited for ICE 2026.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah, thank you. Some of those I didn't know about. So I'm so excited to follow up and kind of watch as all of that expands and grows. And obviously you share more of that knowledge. So thank you for sharing that, because I learned something totally new then. So I appreciate that, Eva. Thank you.
Thanks again.
And if people want to get involved in any of those initiatives, what's the best way that they could get in touch with you, or that they, you know, could reach out? Or,
you know, I'm on LinkedIn, so it's easy. Also, like if you just Google my name, I'm sure my contact details will come up. Yes, I'm fairly public. It's not very protective of my email address.
Of course. Yes, you don't need to do that. But LinkedIn is a place to find you if people want to get involved.
Totally.
All right. Well, I believe it is that time. Drum roll.
Yeah. Eva, we have two final questions for you. These are questions that we're asking all of our iGaming OGs. So we consider you one of our OGs, the originals, the dinosaurs, as some people call us. I don't like that one because I don't feel like we're old enough to be called that, but some of the iGaming OGs. So our first question to you, please, is with decades in the industry, how have you seen the role of women in gaming evolve? And what what changes do you hope to see moving forward?
Well, we've talked a little bit about that, right? That we've seen a big change happening, but there's still a lot to do. I would like, of course, that there's more women working and more people from underrepresented groups working. And I would like that we don't have a DEI program at ICE, you know? I would like to have like a full representation across everything that is being showcased at ICE, whether it's conferences or exhibitors or products, but basically all of this being the diversity that we have in the industry, and for that to just be obvious. You know, I would like that we don't have to talk about DEI, that we don't have a separate space for DEI, you know, I would just like this to be an intrinsic part of our industry and therefore as well of the show.
Woven into the fabric of what we do and how we do it and how we lead every day, as opposed to this box to tick or this, you know, initiative to conquer. All right. And finally, what advice would you give individuals aspiring to enter into the industry?
Well, I would say, you know, my 17 years in the industry. I said it. I don't want to give it a number, but yeah. I'd say, you know, that's a testament that it's a fun industry. You know, my trajectory as well of like going through and different roles and really being given a lot of flexibility is hopefully also a good kind of reflection that this is the industry that can give you a lot of opportunities. You know, it's fun. It's maturing, which is a good thing as well. It's kind of more open to the diversity of views and the diversity of personalities. And I think like, you know, we see people kind of going and coming back. You know, and again, like I think, yeah, exactly, Emily, you're just a great example of it. You know, there's something that like keeps us attracted to it, or keeps a lot of people attracted to it, that we see this like boomerang effect, you know, and again, I think it's a testament to what this industry is. But I also think that, and again, I talked about it, that it's important to be aware of its challenges when it comes to still sexism and discrimination. It's good to educate yourself and just really so you can make sure that you keep your worth, right? Like you keep your authenticity, you know who you are, and you keep your confidence. Because like, of course, you know, I'm not going to lie, that it's always perfect.
Wonderful. Well, this was absolutely an honor and a pleasure to have you here with us today, Eva. We will stay connected, and thanks so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me. It's been fun.
Great way to start the week. Thanks so much for joining us today. We will see you next time on Soroka Speaks.